Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore. Glad to be hanging out with you on this Memorial Day. Things are going well. We'll get to a little bit of soccer. Derek Ray, who is the voice of the World Cup and Bundesliga and the NFL on Amazon Prime and various and sundry other places. He'll join us coming up in a few. We'll talk a little soccer with him. Right now, though, we want to hop back into what is trending. We'll go back to Charlotte yesterday, last night. Actually, it was early this morning when Brad Keselowski picked up the win in the Charlotte 600. It was the longest Cup Series race in NASCAR history, 607 miles, because they had to go into a little bit of overtime. This thing ran on until after midnight before it finally ended. So Keselowski got the win. Jimmy Johnson, who hasn't won in 102 races, now finished second. Then they found out that he had failed a post-race inspection. He goes from second to 40th. And so Chase Elliott, who is he has been the bridesmaid and is yet to be the bride this year, goes from a third-place finish, and now he gets moved up into second. They also had an issue. We didn't talk about this. Alan Cavana with Fox was with us. He covers NASCAR for Fox. He's part of the Fox and the FS1 broadcast of it. But we didn't get a chance to bring this up with him. But Denny Hamlin lost a ballast, which is something they use to kind of – it adds weight to the car. He lost – the ballast, it came off before the when they were doing pace laps, mm-hmm. before the race even started. That will result in a 4-race suspension for his crew chief, his car chief, and his head engineer.
And I mean, that's a quick costly turnaround. Like, you know, how are you going to handle new crew chief coming on with a race on Wednesday?
Yeah.
You know,
that's tough.
Did you see the track personnel running out to grab that thing as well?
Yes.
I mean, it's like 35, 40 pounds.
Yeah.
Come out and trying to grab it one hand. He's like, whoa, wait a minute. I might need two hands on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I didn't watch much of the race. We'll get to why here in a second, but I didn't watch much of it, but I actually was watching it at that point to see the start, and I saw that happen. Now, the reason why I wasn't watching much of the race is because I watched so much of the Champions for Charity event yesterday, raised $20 million for COVID-19 relief. Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, they defeated Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady yesterday. As I told you earlier, Jason, I think clearly you could tell from watching Tom Brady play golf that he has certainly been spending more time studying his Tampa Bay Buccaneer playbook than he has on the golf course. He looked a little rusty.
But can you imagine being in that scenario? I mean, you're already, you know, for maybe one of the few times in Tom Brady's adult life, in a completely overmatched situation with Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods playing with you. And Peyton Manning was pretty good, by the way, as well. But then you're doing it on, awful conditions. I mean, the rain was bad. The wind was bad. It was
you split
tough.
Your pants.
You do that too. But at least you did that after the shot of the day.
Right.
Holing one out from 100 yards plus. You know, you'll take that. When you're in that situation and you're playing, you know, in that kind of format, you're happy if you contribute a couple things during the day. And he had a couple. He had a big putt too later on in the back nine.
Golf is good when Tiger's good.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know how good Tiger's going to be, but I think it's a positive sign for the sport of golf. Tiger would not have taken part in this event if Tiger wasn't healthy. He's not going to put himself out there in a way that he doesn't feel like best represents him and his abilities. So the fact that Tiger played, I think, is a good sign. I think it's good for golf. Again, Tiger is a guy. I don't play golf. Not a golf fan necessarily. I don't watch a ton of it. But Tiger is the guy that when he's out there, he pulls me, who is a casual fan at best. He pulls me to the television.
Easily. I mean, I remember we were coming back from an Atlanta United game on the road the Sunday of the Masters where he won. Watched as much of it as possible on the plane, immediately got in the car, turned it on the radio, drove back, watched the final of it. I think they did a couple things yesterday that were very cool. They've hit on a format that they can replicate. You know, the first time they did this with Tiger and Phil, that was okay. But now that you add a couple of non-golfers but who can play into it, and you get a little bit of trash talking and you get a little bit of fun in it, I was captivated by it. The audio stuff that they did with having the guys here, you know, Charles Barkley talking trash to Tom Brady, then Brady hits the shot, he tells Charles to stick it, stuff like that is great. I want to see what they do for the match three, because you know they're going to. I mean, they raised $20 million for charity yesterday. You need to do a third one. For me, you do whatever it takes to get Michael Jordan mic'd up on a golf course. Right now, after the Last Dance, we know how competitive he is. We know how much he loves to talk trash. You get him out there with some guys that he wants to play golf with and raise as much money as possible. I'm watching it all day.
Agreed. Agreed. No, you're 100% right. They've got the format now. The format works. People pay attention to it. We talked earlier about how important it is for NASCAR to be back out there right now and getting new eyeballs on the sport. Talked about how important it is for MLS at some point in time to try to get back out there to gain eyeballs on their sport. I thought yesterday was great for the game of golf, if for no other reason that, yes, those guys were competing, yes, they were taking it seriously, but it was also fun at the same time. And I thought it was great for the sport.
And that's what was great about Brady being in it and having the moments, good and bad, that he did, because I saw a ton of people on Twitter, a lot of other athletes, but just a lot of friends on Twitter as well, saying, well, I can do that. Right. I can go be Tom Brady today. Right.
I could slice it 30 yards off the green, sure.
I do that very well.
Yes. The SEC has set a return date for their athletes. So Southeastern Conference said on Friday that they can resume athletic activities. Now, they're calling it voluntary. I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of volunteering about. Mm-hmm. I guess they're phrasing it that way in case somebody were to say, hey, I don't feel comfortable.
Yep.
They would have the out not to participate. But I would think if you're planning on playing in the SEC this fall, you better be on campus June 8th. Athletes won't be able to work with coaches. They'll be working with their strength and conditioning. This is all, I think, as much as anything, Jason, it's about getting guys back in shape so that they can begin when they're allowed to actually have a ball in hand, that they can actually begin to work on scheme and drills and actual football related stuff. This is going to be about weights and endurance, and for some of these guys, maybe getting themselves back into shape.
Yeah, establishing the protocols too that are going to be in place. There's a couple elements of it that I want to see get fleshed out. You know, when this was announced, part of the plan for them to return to campus involves two tests over a 72-hour period before they go back to campus. That's a good thing. That gives you a lot of security that guys are going to come back and not bring the virus with them. And if guys do have it, they're going to be, you know, isolated until they test negative. That's good. The one thing that worried me was the talk about how they're not really looking at doing regular testing once the people are back on campus. And I don't see how that's going to work logistically. I just don't get it. There was an idea about not testing until symptoms are shown. And as we've heard, that doesn't guarantee that you're not contagious with it if you're not showing symptoms. So that's a big risk. And as we've talked about today, like, it's expensive to do the amount of testing that you're going to need to do. It is very, very expensive. But you can't risk an outbreak inside of a team right now. And big programs do have the money because they're going to make the money on the TV to do it. The SEC, I think the protocol, once people are back on campus, there's too many question marks around it.
And schools all handled this differently in the beginning. Some schools took it really seriously, others not so much. So I don't know that everybody in the conference is going to be ready June 8th.
No, I think you will see some teams that maybe don't come back as quickly as the rest. I think you'll see some schools that will do testing on their own. If the conference is mandating a certain level of protocol, you're going to see some schools that'll go above and beyond that.
Sure.
And that's what's difficult about college football compared to what the NFL is going to do, compared to what the other professional sports are going to do, because every conference is different, every school is different, every school president has a different perspective on it.
Every governor.
Yeah. So difficult to find that consistency program to program.
Louisville, by the way, bringing their athletes back Wednesday, so day after tomorrow. A couple other real quick, just a couple of college football things. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told the Dallas Morning News last week that head coaches, conference commissioners, and university presidents have to understand that there will probably be games forfeited in the fall due to outbreaks among teams. Michigan's president does not think there will be college football this fall. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, he said that no on-campus instruction, no athletics. He said if we don't have kids back in the classroom, we will not be playing athletics. He said that they would make a decision on that in the coming weeks. That stay-at-home order in Michigan is in place through June the 12th. As we talked about earlier, according to ESPN, you cancel the college football season, it would cost schools a combined $4 billion. That's billion with a B, dollars, if no games are played this year.
One of the big takeaways that I had from our conversation earlier with Lynn Scarborough of the Lindy's magazines, and if you missed that, you can actually rewind on the radio.com app. You can scroll back to 11:20 when we had him on. But the idea that some of these early season games that we're used to seeing where small teams come in and play big teams and they get paid six figures plus to do it, those games might not happen. And that could be catastrophic for some of the smaller programs that rely on that money to fund not just their football program, but their whole athletic program for the fall. And, you know, we're talking Kennesaw State, we're talking Alcorn State, we're talking teams that take those games early on to get that check, to have a team. Those games might not happen, and if you don't have that money and then you're playing behind closed doors, is the funding going to be there to do this for some of the smaller programs? That's where my big concern is in the college football landscape.
NBA sounds like they're working to get their season back underway. They would play all of the games at the Disney Complex in Orlando. Sports Illustrated said earlier this week that the NBA wanted to get to a 70-game season. The reason why 70 is important, that's the magic number for the television contracts. So if you don't play 70, the NBA is going to have to give some of that TV money back. The Hawks, by the way, have played 67 games if they end up going to Orlando to play. Now, the scenarios call for either 12 to 10 teams from each conference, so you'd be looking at 20 to 24 teams from each conference going to Orlando and playing. The Hawks, right now, they're about 14th in the East, so they would not be a part of this, as from the way things read. If you read the Sports Illustrated, by the way, good article, but if you read that, it doesn't sound like there is the NBA season is going to restart. It just does not sound like the Atlanta Hawks will be a part of it.
Yeah, you've got a couple issues with the NBA. You've got to figure out what your playoff format's going to look like if you have 24 teams, you know, teams getting byes, what kind of advantage that gives to other teams who are going to be able to get into a rhythm during this time. You've also got, it's been reported that 17% of the league roster is out of the country right now. You've got to bring those players back into the country, which isn't an easy thing to do at the moment, and potentially have them quarantine when they come back and then jump into training. You know, you might not start games until late July.
A lot of things still left to be figured out here. We'll continue. We'll talk a little soccer. Derek Ray, he is one of the voices of the World Cup, Bundesliga on Fox Sports, the NFL on Amazon Prime. He'll join us. We'll talk a little bit specifically about Bundesliga and what they've done in Germany to be able to play. We'll get to that when we return. Crisco Forth, Jason Longshore, in for Andy and Randy today on the Midday Show. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the Midday Show. No Andy, no Randy today. Instead, Crisco Forth, Jason Longshore. Glad to be hanging out with you. And glad to head out on the waitfor.com hotline and say hello to Derek Ray. Derek, one of the voices of the World Cup, Bundesliga on Fox Sports. He covers the NFL for Amazon Prime as well, and he's kind enough to give us a little bit of time today. Derek, we've drawn a lot of the comparisons today between the kind of the restarting of sports in the U.S., in particular MLS and the NBA, and what the NFL is going to look like to kind of what's happening in Germany with Bundesliga. That is a league that is known for their fans. Now they're playing in front of an empty stadium. What is that like to see soccer played without the chants and people not in the stadium?
It's a little bit surreal, to be honest, because in Germany everybody likes to say it's football as it's meant to be. And that means with this huge character that is the crowd, the fans. And it's why so many people like to go to Germany to watch their soccer, because atmospherically it is as good as it gets. So everybody's having to readjust, but I don't think too many people are that worried about it. I think they are relieved that we've now had two match weeks without any major incidents. Things are going relatively smoothly. But it is still wait and see, because the league organizers did say at the outset it was a matter of earning the right on a week-to-week basis to have these games go ahead. And now we have a midweek round coming up with some huge games this midweek, Tuesday and Wednesday.
It's been interesting, Derek, watching this, to see the Bundesliga talk about taking on the responsibility of doing this the right way, and something that we've seen in the last few weeks echoed by the leadership at NASCAR. You know, what are some of the things that the Bundesliga has done to do this in the right way and try to set that example for other leagues around the world?
Well, it started very early when you think back, and obviously Germany is a highly decentralized country, so it wasn't just a question of the league wanting to do this. Obviously, they had a desire to do it for economic reasons, but they had to get the various tiers of government on board, from the federal government to the different state legislatures and all the other apparatus in place in terms of government in Germany. But this hygiene plan that they outlined was very detailed, and I know has been studied by sports bodies, not just in Europe, but here in the USA as well. And so they got medical people on side with it to make sure that it all added up. Now, what we should say is Germany is in a very different place comparatively, when you talk about COVID, as regards how successful it's been and testing capacity, and, you know, when you compare it with the USA, for example. So it's not a matter of just saying, okay, Germany did this, so we can do it now, and it all will work. But the teams had to, you know, sit and wait for a while before they could get back into full contact training. That really only happened about a week and a half before the restart of matches, which was far from ideal. And the difficulty you have in Germany is that because of the decentralized nature of the country that I mentioned earlier, cases are not treated the same, say, in Dresden in the east as they are perhaps in Cologne in the west. And so what has happened is Dresden, a second division club, they had some positive cases, and their entire squad had to go into quarantine for 14 days. That hasn't happened with regard to other teams who have had positive cases. So it's difficult to talk about Germany and sort of say, yeah, it's all joined up and everything happens the same way in every city. But the sentiment was right, the desire was right, the detail was right, and because of the situation with COVID in Germany, they've been able to get back more quickly than anyone else.
Derek Ray's one of the voices of Bundesliga on Fox Sports, also the NFL on Amazon Prime. You hear him on World Cup broadcast as well. He's with us here on Sports Radio on 92.9 The Game. When play resumed a couple of weeks ago, Derek, could you tell a difference in the quality of play after the layoff?
I was a bit surprised, to be honest. I thought that there might be a noticeable difference. There was a slight difference. I think everything was a little bit slower. And who knows, maybe the lack of intensity that we're accustomed to not being there was a factor in that. I was listening to one of the referees talking this past weekend, and he said, having done the Dortmund-Schalke game, that's normally one of the most passionate fixtures in all of Germany, that it was noticeably less hectic. I think that everybody deserves to be congratulated for how they've managed to get back as quickly as they have done. And the sporting side of it has been compelling. I think the games have been very watchable. And in fact, I think a lot of new fans have latched onto it, people who perhaps watch other forms of soccer on a week-to-week basis, who have wanted to now be interested in the Bundesliga, because it is, you know, one of the most high-profile leagues in the world. But, of course, let's face it, there's competition every week in the form of other leagues, such as the Premier League in England, La Liga in Spain, you name it. So I think that when you consider, as I said earlier, just a week and a half of full contact training, and then just training in small groups prior to that, a lot of work without the ball, I think everybody has done pretty well in terms of getting back up to speed.
Now that we've seen teams a couple of times, there's a huge match tomorrow that will have the sporting landscape all to itself, Dortmund and Bayern Munich. What are you looking at with these two teams and how they have handled coming back? Dortmund's looked especially strong.
They absolutely have, yes. Der Klassiker, they call it. They have done for about a decade or so. It didn't used to be known as that, but everything, I suppose, needs a catchy name now. And these are the big two in Germany. They've been the two who you think of in terms of major honours in the last decade. Bayern, the record champions, and most people's picks to win it again. Certainly they were mine at the start. Borussia Dortmund, have had their ups and their downs, but they've had their ups more recently, and a certain fellow by the name of Erling Haaland, the young Norwegian, has helped them on that front with 10 goals in 10 games since joining the club. I think it is really almost must-win for Dortmund. Certainly they can't afford to lose. If Bayern do win this game and they build up a 7-point advantage at the top, then it's difficult to see anybody being able to dethrone them. I think it should be a very high-level game when you consider how well both teams have been playing. You mentioned Borussia Dortmund with their two victories against Schalke, their old rivals, and then against Wolfsburg this past weekend. Bayern put five past Eintracht Frankfurt. Bayern haven't really played the strongest opposition, you'd have to say, since coming back. But they have Robert Lewandowski, who hit the net again at the weekend, 27 goals for him. And, you know, they are still the class of the field. They're the team you need to take down if you have designs on winning the title. And I think, ironically, this will have the biggest worldwide audience ever for a Borussia Dortmund-Bayern game, even though there will be no fans in attendance. But that is our new normal.
Right now it is, and we're all kind of figuring this out on the fly. I mean, one big question that's come up in England with the discussions of the Premier League relaunching, here with college football as well, is how are you going to keep the fans from gathering to watch the match, whether it's at parties, whether it is outside of the venues? Has there been any concern with that with the big match tomorrow?
Well, there was concern before the teams came back. A number of politicians spoke about this, and actually we had the police trade unions being particularly vocal on that front, but really there has not been a problem with it. Now, I don't know if that speaks to personal responsibility on behalf of people in Germany. There's the other side of it, of course, that some of the ultra groups who are particularly critical of games going ahead at all. They think that football without fans is football without a soul. They have, at the same time, made it very clear they will not be gathering at all because, again, that goes with social responsibility as they see it and not posing problems on that front. So, again, it's wait and see, and everybody's analyzing it, but this has not appeared to be a difficulty in Germany. So, you know, we'll see if that's the case in other countries.
Derek Ray, you hear him on the Scottish FIFA 20. He's one of the voices of the World Cup, Bundesliga on Fox Sports, and the NFL on Amazon Prime. He's with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Derek, has there been any conversation at all as to when they might start allowing fans back into the stadium, or is that something that's just not going to happen this year?
It's a great question, and I think it is evolving as we go. What I will tell you is I listen a lot to scientists in Germany on the German news media, and I've yet to hear one who has come out and said that he or she thinks that there will be fans inside a German venue again this year. I mean, that is just the reality of the situation. And similarly with the people who are at the head of governing bodies. They're not committing themselves, obviously. Now, there is a ban on gatherings in Germany going right the way through until September. So we know that's the case at a very minimum. As I said earlier, it's a decentralized country, so each state has the right to make its own rules, but there are some things that the federal government likes to monitor, and this is certainly one such thing. So, you know, we're getting new information every day, but I think, you know, it tells you a lot, doesn't it, that Germany, even being ahead of the curve, and it is ahead of the curve because of the way it acted early on, even in Germany, they have real doubts about it for the rest of this year and perhaps going into next year. And that's why I said it's our new normal, because I think we are going to have to adapt, whether we like it or not, to this being the case, certainly in Germany and other European countries for a long time.
Derek, we talk a lot about the MLS here because, you know, in large part because of Atlanta United and the success that they have had. This is, though, a young league, especially when you start to compare it to professional baseball or football or basketball that have been in this country now for, you know, for decades, or in the case of baseball, over a century now. How can MLS turn this into a positive for them in what is, again, relatively a new league?
Well, it's interesting. I think MLS is looking, obviously, at coming back. It's going to be potentially in a different format. I know the discussions are evolving as we speak now. But I think, you know, what we see in Germany so far is that having some sense of normality, it's not the full extent of normality, obviously, but having some normality is beneficial. So if MLS can come back, and if they have a good plan in place, which I'm sure they will, again, it will be under restricted circumstances, then it might shine a light for a lot of people on what it's doing. And we know how many people play the sport and how many people watch other leagues around the world. I've always felt that you can watch multiple leagues at the same time. You know, we can juggle a little bit, and you might prefer one league, you might prefer the Premier League or the Bundesliga or La Liga, but you can watch MLS too, or you might be an MLS fan above all else and have half an eye on the other leagues. I think they are all part of the same sport. It is the most popular sport in the world, and, you know, more power to MLS. Let's hope that it can come up with a plan and it can come back and have people watch it.
Derek, appreciate the time. Fantastic stuff. Thanks for hanging out with us for a little bit.
Thanks, guys.
Derek Ray, you can hear him, one of the voices of the World Cup. Bundesliga on Fox Sports, the NFL on Amazon Prime. Great stuff from him.
Derek's the best. Derek really is an stuff, expert man. On the game worldwide, and you need to check out his call of the NFL games on Amazon Prime. He's great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Good stuff from him. Glad to have him joining us. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Atlanta United, both on the pitch and off the pitch, especially since we got Jason Longshore in studio with us today. The bearded one. We'll talk some soccer when we come back. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Crisco Forth, Jason Longshore. Glad to be with you on this Memorial Day. You can listen online, 929thegame.com, and always on the radio.com app. Tell all of your devices, your smart speakers, say, play 92.9 The Game. And you can hear Sports Radio 92.9 The Game that way as well. Jason and I, we have covered a lot of ground today. We've talked NASCAR, we've talked golf. We've talked about the NBA and what that may look like if they can ever get back on the field. I want to kind of talk a little bit about Atlanta United here and kind of where they are, where they're headed, what this may look like. You and I asked you earlier today, you kind of hit on it in something that you said before the show today, and we talked about it briefly, and I told you, I said I wanted to come back to it at some point in time. A big part of the success that Atlanta United has had has been through the transfer market. What is the impact of the pandemic on the transfer market, in your opinion?
We have no idea yet. That's what's so hard to figure out, because you're looking at a scenario. The German season, for example, could finish in 5-6 weeks. The Premier League season might not have even restarted yet by that time. So this next transfer window, it's not going to be lined up like it usually is. So, okay, when are teams going to be buying? When are teams going to be selling? Who knows? We don't know what it's going to be for MLS just yet. The other thing that's a huge factor in this is how many teams are going to have the money to buy. You know, you've got teams in Europe that are coming to the end of a season. You think about any team at the end of their season, you've got players out of contract. You've got to make decisions on re-signing guys. You know, what are you going to look at? And as Derek Ray just told us in the last segment, in Germany, they're not looking at fans in the stands the rest of the year. So that's another hit on revenues down the road. So are clubs going to be willing to commit to big money transfers? There's some who will. Real Madrid, they've got the money to handle this sort of thing.
Yep.
Big clubs in England are going to have the money to handle this sort of thing. Liverpool's got the money to handle this sort of thing. But the market for players like Ezequiel Barco, for Pitti Martinez, isn't going to be what it was before this. But also, then the flip side is MLS and its general strength in terms of financial security and financial heft. They're going to be in a position where teams in South America maybe would have wanted to hold out for that big European offer or hold on to a player for another year or two. They might need to sell young talent now to bring in any form of revenue.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you next, is about South America. That part of the globe has been pretty good to Atlanta United. Any idea on what the impact of the pandemic has been there and the impact that it's had on soccer there?
It's been later than it was here, and we were later than Asia and Europe.
Right.
So in South America, we're really only starting to see it now. The Argentine League is one that Atlanta has bought from consistently in its history, and they're going to reorganize their league going forward to try to mitigate some of this. They're not going to have any teams get relegated out of the first division. They're only going to have teams get promoted. They've kind of reorganized the business structure of it. But you've got teams that are going to have to sell to balance the books, and that's just a factor. And outside of Boca Juniors in Argentina, probably every team is going to have to sell some big money players to make payroll. Brazil is the league that's been seen as the strongest financially in South America and the best in quality. Brazil could be the country that gets hit the hardest by this pandemic, as we're starting to see. They've handled it very poorly. They've been very slow to react. And you've got clubs that, you know, some states are able to start training now. Others, there's been, you know, top clubs that are not allowed to train but have actually been caught doing training sessions. You've got clubs that are having 8, 10, 12 players test positive for coronavirus and not able to do any sessions. So Brazil's the one that could take the biggest hit in it, but every country in South America, they're going to have to sell players, and Atlanta United could benefit from that.
You know, much in the same way we've kind of talked about it with college football, about how you're talking about, you know, different conferences may handle it differently, different universities or systems may handle it differently, governors may handle this differently. In the MLS, you're seeing Atlanta United that has had these workouts that they are, what, 2 weeks into now?
Yes.
Am I right about that? 2 weeks into it? We just saw it scroll earlier on the screen. I actually think the news came out yesterday that New York is going to allow their professional sports teams to begin working out. Any idea where the rest of the MLS is right now in terms of who's doing what compared to what Atlanta United's doing?
We're almost up to everybody doing the individual training. Nobody can do group sessions yet. It's only individual training. And New York City is now allowed to start. The New York Red Bulls announced this morning that they'll be able to start. Montreal announced that they'll be able to start. The Philadelphia Union had to go over to Delaware, which isn't far, but they had to move over to Delaware to actually start some training sessions. Almost everybody is back up to that level. And that was a necessary step, because I don't think there's a whole lot of competitive balance issues with the individual training. Once you get to any kind of a group session, you've got to have everybody on the same footing to be able to do that. And it's probably going to be a month from that day until you start playing games. You know, in our last segment, Derek Ray mentioned about a week and a half that the Bundesliga teams had in full contact, regular training. That's on the short side. Premier League managers have said they want 3 weeks. MLS has been talking in some of the proposals that have floated out there in around 2 weeks of full team training before you start playing matches. The clock's ticking right now.
Yeah, you mentioned the MLS proposal that has been, I guess, been floated out there. All 26 teams go to Orlando. You spend 2 weeks basically getting ready, and then play would begin with a tournament. Is that right? They would start with a tournament?
I think the idea is they want to use a tournament format to capture people's attention, but also have those group games in a tournament double as regular season games. And one of the proposals that's been leaked out by The Athletic would see the rest of the season in the fall, once teams are able to play in their markets behind closed doors, only play in conference, and Nashville would come over to the East. One reason you want Nashville in the East is the amount of money they'd have to spend to go to the West Coast in the Western Conference, sure, game after game after game. Revenue is going to be a big part of this, and being able to have everybody together in one area, and ESPN, one of your TV partners that you will be renegotiating with in the coming years, you'd like to have their buy-in. You need those moments to be able to try to mitigate these revenue hits. One of the big issues that has to get sorted out before you get a proposal finally nailed down is how much money are the players going to give back to get this season started. That's a conversation in Major League Baseball that will likely be a conversation in every professional sport. What kind of a pay cut and or deferral are you going to see? And in MLS, with the amount of money that comes in from match day revenue, for some teams as high as 90%, you take that away, teams have to save money where they can to survive.
If you would have asked me a week ago, Jason, I would have said I thought Major League Baseball might be the first, or the next, I should say, shouldn't say the first, but the next professional sport to return based upon what we were hearing at that time. Then you start hearing about the financial stuff that's out there. The owners are saying, I heard a number yesterday, I don't know how accurate this is, I haven't looked it up, but that in Major League Baseball, about 39% of their revenue comes from ticket sales. And if you're not going to put butts in seats, that's going to be an issue from a revenue standpoint. Players don't want to take less money because they feel like they're putting themselves at risk to go play this game and the travel and everything that would be involved in it. It's a tough situation. You talk about it in MLS. I'm speaking about it for Major League Baseball. There's not an easy answer here for either side.
Worldwide, there's not. And it's something that I think in other parts of the world, the conversation is going more towards how many teams are we going to see survive this? You know, I don't think that's an issue for our major leagues here in this country. For minor leagues, yeah, minor league baseball could look dramatically different, even more different than Major League Baseball intended for it to look like, with potentially cutting 40 teams. That number is going to grow by a lot. You know, there's talk in England.
I don't think minor league baseball happens this year.
This is the problem, that I don't even think it's a this year question. I think it's a 4 years to come question. Yeah. Because if you don't have fans in the stands this year, that's going to affect your revenue short term. When is that going to happen? And you're adding expenses on. You know, for Major League Baseball, under the proposals that I've seen with the amount of testing they've talked about, you're talking $15, $20, $25 million of expenses in just the testing, not anything else related to COVID-19. So you're taking revenue away. You're adding a huge expense on top. At some point, owners don't have the money to make that happen.
Give me your best educated guess on when you think Atlanta United's back on the pitch.
My gut is probably second week of July. I think it will happen.
With games or with practice?
With games.
Okay.
With games. Because I think this Orlando scenario, and we're judging it all secondhand based off things that are getting leaked to The Athletic, I think you're starting to see that the amount of money they're talking about cutting, it's a manageable discussion between the league and the players. And MLS is a single entity. You're not dealing club by club with this. They are all one business, the way the league is structured. So they're able to handle that pretty easily. I think once you get past the money issue, the protocols, you're going to follow a lot of what the Bundesliga has done. And every week the Bundesliga plays and doesn't have a rash of positive tests, the more you start to believe in the protocols. You haven't seen an outbreak in the Bundesliga. England has just started to return to training, and they've had 8 positive tests over 2 rounds of testing. You're seeing that they're able to manage this first by the players coming in without COVID-19, but then the protocols in place are not allowing it to happen and spread. That's going to help the players feel safe. The Orlando scenario is not ideal. I could see it get tweaked, but I think MLS feels that need to get back on the field quickly.
So we got 60 seconds here. Are we coming back or are we done after this, Ken? We're done? All right, real quick, Jason. What would that look like in Orlando? How many fields are there that are available for MLS? How many games could they conceivably play in a day?
The training, you've got tons of fields, no problem there. The question is going to be, how many fields do you have set up to broadcast? Because that's what this is going to revolve around. You've got to get these games out on the ESPN networks, on the Fox networks, on the Univision networks. That part I don't know. The idea that has been floated is games in the morning and games in the evening, because you want to avoid games during the day in the heat of Central Florida. So 3 games a day on at least one field. I don't know if you can do that on multiple fields.
Why not play this thing indoors?
It's a good question. I think the thing that Orlando gives you is the place for everybody to stay and train and be in a sort of locked down environment to mitigate the spread.
We got a pretty nice little place down the street here.
But do you have enough places for that many games in that short a period of time? I don't know.
I mean, it's a thought, right?
Hey, I'd like it. Then it'd be easier for me.
Jason, thanks, man. It's always fun, but really appreciate you sitting in with me today.
No, thanks for letting me hang out. Fun.
That's going to do it for us. Stick around. Nick Kale, Willie P. They are on the way next. They'll take you home on this Memorial Day. I'm Chris Goforth. He's Jason Longshore. Thanks to Kenneth Roundtree for helping us put today's show together as well. Appreciate you for listening. We'll see you next time here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, that's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.